I'm starting the spoof the night off with a spoof on Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. It's on Comedy Central with I think his name is Chris. Donald Trump is played by Anthony Adamanuick, and Bernie Sanders is played by James Adomian. So it's pretty funny. I'll start it.
I don't think this guy's going to make it to the election. Unbelievable.
All right, Bob. Thank you for the issue.
All right. It is now time to start with our candidates in place. The first ever at midnight presidential debate. Here we go. Welcome to At Midnight. I'm Chris Hardwick, and I'm wearing a very expensive tie. Our guest tonight are the stars of Trump versus Bernie, the debate, premiering April 27th at 9 p.m. on Fusion. But make no mistake, this is definitely Trump and Sanders. Thanks. Before we begin, I'd like to remind the crowd to please be respectful. Don't shout anything out like, lick me granddaddy or eat you racist orange stain. These are presidential candidates. They're not boys for your amusement. I would like to please keep that in mind. It's very serious and very important. Perhaps the most important thing you'll see on any television network. Now we're going to offer them each 30 seconds for opening statements. Senator Sanders, we'll begin with you.
Thank you, Chris. My brothers and sisters, we are winning hearts, we are winning minds, and from time to time, we are winning states. Idaho, Utah, Arizona, I thank you. Two and a half of those, I think. We are very pleased that as of today, it's just been announced, we won the endorsement of a very important group, the Soy and Tofu Packers Union. I thank them for their endorsement. We've got some tremendous supporters. I am backed and endorsed by one half of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, which is also two-thirds of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And look, we are winning amongst some key demographics that I think it's important to keep in mind. Amongst voters who shop at Whole Foods and yet feel guilty about shopping at Whole Foods, we are winning 92% of the vote. Amongst voters from households where the primary mode of transportation is a bicycle, we are winning 88% of the vote. With voters under the age of 21, we are winning 120% of the vote. We are winning, and we will continue to win because the top 1% is
ultimately. All right, thank you, Senator.
Excuse me.
I would like to remind everyone to try to stick to time. Senator Sanders went about an hour and a half beyond the 30 seconds.
Forgive me. I haven't been on TV this much all year.
All right. Mr. Trump.
Well, thank you very much, Chip. Let me tell you,
okay,
this country, we're losing. We're losing. We don't win anymore. We don't win anymore. And we're going to start winning. I'll tell you, first of all, I have the same policy on women as I do the Chinese, which is that China is our enemy. And I'll tell you, China is our enemy. I'll tell you that. We started out with 17 people on the island, and Scott Walker, Uncanny Valley, Android Face, got knocked up. And I have received a rose in every single ceremony since then. We got to go through it. Unbelievable. I mean, Iowa, I'm going to test hydrogen bombs in Iowa. I can tell you that. I came in second. I dug a hole in Iowa on the way out, and I sexually assaulted the state. I can tell you that. But here's the point. Very important. I mean, Jeb Bush, very low energy guy. He was the Terry Schiavo of presidential candidates. I can tell you that. Those eyes clicking back and forth. Someone put a needle in his neck. And, you know, and here's the thing. I love Chris Christie. Great guy. I love Chris Christie. But he is a big guy. I threw a paperclip at him during one of the debates. And it went into orbit, and I promise you, if I become president, we will name it a moon in our solar system. I guarantee you that. And I tell you this, Carly Fiorina will be the new White House horse. I'll tell you that.
All right, that's all the time we have for intros. I think there is some contrast between the candidates you see on stage. This might not be the debate you get, but this is the debate you deserve.
All right, thank you. All right, everyone, very thought-provoking discourses. We'll get to a quick break. We'll be right back, continuing our at midnight debate with Donald Trump and Senator Bernie Sanders when we return.
I'm the host of everything, Chris Hardwick. With today's internet headlines, it's Rapid Refresh. We're going to be talking about a wide variety of issues today, gentlemen. A lot of internet issues, if you seem to be familiar with that. Let's begin. Voters, you've heard these two comments.
I have a modem. Yes, thank you.
Okay, good.
I am a Mexican guy who reads the internet to me. Wonderful guy.
Thank you.
Wonderful guy. Hello, Paco.
Voters, every crazy thing he says just makes him more popular. It's unbelievable.
I'm a demon. I'm a demon on earth.
You've heard these two comments on a wide variety of political topics on other news programs and on debates, but we're about to show you the internet, and we want to discuss these topics that affect internet Americans. Our first topic is environmental activism. Environmental activism. The state of the environment is a very real concern to everyday Americans, which is why millions of web users were glued to their laptops this week following the story of a crazy dude in a tree. Here we go. This is a bearded man who's in Seattle. He climbed the majestic conifer Tuesday, refused to come down, throwing apples and pine cones at officials, and generally being the most Seattle person ever. Perhaps most disturbingly, the tree never actually gave consent. Senator Sanders, the tree man came down earlier this afternoon, but how do you respond to this growing trend of tree dwellers?
Sure, I thank you for that question. Let me say this, and when I say that, what I mean is I'm going to say something. As the only candidate running for president who has himself lived in a tree, I believe I have some clarity on this issue, and I think what we see is a vision of the future. I support tree dwellers, and I believe it's a fantastic way to solve the housing crisis by having people climb up trees rather than...
Okay, I'm going to bring Don, and now we have at least one caller on the phone. I see John just popped in too, so I'll play 30 more seconds of this Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders funny spoof on Comedy Central.
I will tell you, I've had a number of my friends murdered by trees. Sonny Bono, terrible. Edward Kennedy, okay, the guy from whatever that Taken movie is, Liam Neeson, his wife, all murdered by trees. Terrible, terrible. Trees are terrible, and I promise you this, if I become president, we will get rid of every tree. We're going to turn, we will turn every forest into glass, I guarantee you.
All right,
we got to use these nukes. We haven't used them in years.
All right, but Mr. Trump, also points to Senator Sanders. Next topic, the judicial branch, with the debate raging over filling the upcoming Supreme Court.
Okay, I'll pull the callers in now. Good evening, Don.
Well, good evening, Purple Jane. How are you?
Now, you told me last time to only ask for one person at a time, and I said, good evening, Don, and John answered. Good evening, John.
Hi there. You know we all sound alike. Come on.
I'm going to be Don, and Don's going to be John tonight.
Right. So bring on the Christians, and I'll bring on the Lions. Oh, no, I'll bring on the Christians. You bring on the Lions this time.
I want to talk about black people tonight and the oppression of white. How the white man's been pushed down by the black man.
You guys were both party for the party. I played 8 minutes of Comedy Central's with Chris Hardwick, Bernie Trump speech.
I'm glad that I'm doing something else because it sure was not funny.
There was some the best line was Jeb Bush reminds me a lot of Terri Schiavo. The eyes blink back and forth or something like that. That was really the only funny part. But
the only funny part. Okay.
Jimmy Fallon's much better at Trump. I wanted to mention to you guys that the topic of the show tonight is it's mainly Don telling John and me about the Nevada State Democratic Convention. And because John went there with his wife for 2 days. And then my friend Dave and I were talking this weekend in St. Paul because I went down there. And he said that Donald Trump is the symptom, not the cause, of America's current political identity crisis. So maybe
Absolutely.
We can comment on that. So which one do you guys want to do first?
I'll give my synopsis first because I may not be able to finish the program without a lot of amphetamines. For the most part, I'm running on about 2 hours of sleep. We drove
Same
down
here.
To you know how I feel. We drove down to Las Vegas for the Nevada State Democratic Delegate Convention Saturday. We went down to Thursday.
Did you and Pat get nominated for the national convention?
We didn't try, but that was a whole situation where you had to go out and campaign during those 2 days, yada, yada, yada. So we have plenty to do this July, believe me, with our NAACP convention in Cincinnati in the middle of the month. We have a family reunion in Indianapolis at the start of the month. So the convention would have been near the end of the month, and that meant that we would have been in Nevada pretty much the entire month of July, and we just can't do that right now for various reasons. But,
I mean, you would have been in the East Coast for the whole month of July. You said Nevada.
Well, we would have been, I'm sorry, the whole East Coast. Sorry about that.
By the way, John, you might have to close the show tonight because I've gotten 3 hours of sleep since Saturday morning, and I feel pretty tired, too.
Well, I'm sure we could make an hour, and then after the hour,
let's just keep it to 60 minutes. I don't want to, Don can talk about the Nevada convention, but John, after Don's done, maybe you can throw in a few sidebars of what you've been doing the last week, besides falling off piers.
I don't have the same idea what that means, John.
I have physical evidence, too. I might send you a picture, but I'm afraid you'll post it on Facebook and the whole world.
No, I won't.
Your only image of me will be this scarred, wretched man staring at a selfie, kind of like the Kardashians. But no, I think I'll send it to you anyway, just for the amusement factor.
Are you saying you found the phone that fell in the ocean?
No, I basically I took a picture though of my face after the incident, so I think I'll send it to you for your amusement.
I think I'd like that because it just woke me and Don up more, and it's a funny story. Okay, John, go ahead with your state news, and then John can tell you his funny story. You know, like as a midsection, you know, highlight.
Midsection highlight.
I mean, as a mid-show high, you know, like a mid-show comedy.
Oh, mid-show. I was going to say, John, did you put on 30 or 40 pounds in a week and a half or something? John put on a week and a half. In a week and a half, you put on 35 pounds? Is that what the mid-section story was
like?
No. Oh. I'm sorry. I was just trying to figure it out.
You're talking about bad jokes. That's the epitome of bad jokes.
That was a real bad place. But, so we left Thursday, got down there Friday morning about 7 o'clock, and was able to make a meeting, and I was able to get my two-mile swim in that I love to do at really nice pools. Stayed at Arizona Charlie's. Terrible customer service. Pretty good facilities. We were there after registration. We got involved in the proselytization of the issues, of course, petitions, signings, speeches from both parties, delegates for their candidate. And we were able to just relax, went to dinner, and was able to talk to network, which is the whole purpose of the caucus system. And Saturday, however, was a clusterfuck, and I will say that freely, and I think everyone will agree with me who was there.
Was there?
That was Saturday in Las Vegas. It was at the Paris Hotel on the Strip, and so we were there. Paris is not the most customer service friendly hotel in Vegas, but that's
wow. Them.
But the thing is that it was an amazing and an amazingly angst filled, stressful convention where everything was behind in time. We got to the convention at 9:30. They still hadn't started, and we were supposed to be there at 8. On agreeing on the convention laws and bylaws and rules, we hadn't even started by 9:30 when we got there late because of parking, traffic problems. If you've ever been to Las Vegas, you know that the certain times of the day can be as bad as any place in the country. But we were there, and the weather was beautiful, however, 80 degrees and a slight breeze. But anyway, we were there Saturday morning, put in the check-in, and which finally was easy because registration was a pain. But we went in and started listening to some of the campaign speeches because they were filling dead time. And it was just unreal, the tension, because you could see that Bernie contingent was ready to do something, who knows what. But me being the Washoe County Sergeant of Arms and on the platform committee, I have vested interest in making sure that these conventions run smoothly. So when the Bernie contingent started Trump rabble-rousing, I'll call it, because I swear the same people, it's like the music videos. The same old hoes, you see them in one video, you see them in the other. Trump and Bernie probably trade off rabble-rousers. But they started coming, so I and my indelible wisdom and instinct jumped up between the executive board dais, seated at the dais, and the Bernie hecklers, and just stayed there for about an hour and a half, standing, looking at these guys, wondering what kind of wound did these people just get out of? Because they are rude, they are not knowledgeable of the process. They are knowledgeable about some of the issues and what Bernie stands for, but in terms of the actual process, they are frustrated because it's slow, cumbersome, and inequitable. And let me add that and make sure that all the listeners understand that, is that the they have some good points. The caucus system has flaws, and they have it should be revisited to amend. But they were there for an hour and a half straight from the start because the Nevada caucus was strong-arming the issues, the platform, the planks, and some of the rules and regulations changed without, again, and this is becoming normal modus operandi of the Nevada parties and political process, is that our leaders railroad the process through our throats without the necessary numbers of votes. That's what started it in amending our convention rules, and it didn't stop for an hour and a half. So I'm looking at these guys, and I'm keeping them back. We kept them at odds. It was very relatively calm, except for people falling out, fainting because of the enclosed area that they were in for their heckling. And so we got it all taken care of. And then we were so far behind that the actual convention, from what I understand, when we left Pat and I at 6:45 in the evening, so we were there all day. We left at 6:45 for the 500-mile drive back to Reno from Las Vegas. And
God, that's a ridiculous amount of miles.
That's the West, baby. You know the West. You live here. You and John.
It's not 500
you and John,
miles.
It's
350 miles from L.A. to Frisco.
No. You are way wrong on that. But that's all right. That life goes on. God loves you. Bottom line is that we were down and we had left at 6:45 and we got notification in the text that they had not even finished counting the credentials on who would be the type of setup for the delegates. Bernie had the lead here in the delegates, so he and the caucuses, so he had the first dibs that if he wanted, and he had three delegates. Hillary had three delegates, so he had first dibs on his proportional setup. And apparently, he chose two men and a woman, so that meant that Hillary would have had to choose two women and a man. You know, of course, that was no problem with her. But the thing is that they were not finished voting when we were 99.
Are you saying that Bernie
race.
Sanders handpicked his delegates?
No, I'm saying that the delegates, the delegate process is slow and cumbersome in a caucus style. We've, our Democratic president, state president, alluded to that in her opening remarks, that we have to look at our caucus that may have to go to a primary because it is far too cumbersome for your normal average voter. We spent between the precinct vote back in February, besides that vote, for the end of February, besides that, the state platform committee convention and delegates convention and this county delegate convention, then the state delegate convention, and the hours that we put in, and we're doing it on our own dime, I can't see why we need to continue that. Just like the Electoral College we were talking about a couple weeks ago, we need to really look at the voting reforms and see if we can streamline this because this is far, far too cumbersome for the normal proletariat. When we're talking about poll tax, this is a poll tax perpetrated by the state and county parties. So we need to look at that. But anyway, back to the convention
That's
itself.
That's a pretty good summary. I don't want to overtax you.
That at the end, 12 midnight, when we were about an hour and a half away from home, from driving, they still hadn't finished. And the hotel was ready to kick them out. So we're talking about the fact that we might not have completed. And the Hillary contingent, which was there the latest, I'm sure, in numbers, closed the convention without the PLC and the at-large delegates to be voted in. So this was another showing because, everyone knows, I'm a lobbyist, too. In our last session, many of the Republican leaders and the when we're talking about the the cases,
yes,
they they stepped all over Robert's rule of law, too. So, in essence, Robert's rule of law and parliamentary procedure was just lost. And it's being lost more and more every convention that I go to. The actual process is being just stepped on, just being trampled. And the rules and regulations that we used to go through for conventions, organizations, political legislation, things like that, they no longer apply. People are interjecting their own way that they want to work, and nobody has teeth. None of the organizations or laws positions have teeth enough to dole out any consequences.
Who's driving this bully attitude, like non-cooperation attitude?
It depends on who's leading what facet. If you have an organization that is the Hillary organization, then your president, chairperson, whomever you call the leader, is the one who is being tapped as the one who is the bully, is the one who is trampling over any of the protocol. If you have the Koch brothers, for instance, that are, you know, and that would be even farther. If they are putting money into some political chairperson's pocket, that person is going to bend over backwards to get fucked in the ass as well as possible. And so that's just their nature of the beast.
I get it. Well, John, do you have any questions for Don?
Well, I've served on the board of directors for a condo association that I'm here, that I live or reside at. And we tried Robert's Rules, and I can tell you, unless you're familiar with it or you're educated with it, people that are new to it, it just baffles them. They can't figure out one question. It takes like 10 minutes just to ask, if you can ask to have a question. It would be better to use Simon Says as your rules to govern, probably. But I'm just wondering, you know, with kind of the process there, with all the electronics that we have, wouldn't it seem like they could just poll people in advance, you know, like this is what we're going to work on, or these are the rules we want to use, you know, electronically respond, email or whatever, or mail in your stuff, and then when they show up, it's ready to go?
No. Wrong again, John. That's the whole problem with this computerization. It is extremely unreliable, and it breaks. Our precinct, when we had our precinct caucus, our computers broke down for 45 minutes, causing lines around the two blocks, and those people at 12 o'clock who were still in line had to wait until 1:30 in that particular instance to get in and to begin the caucus. And we were supposed to be starting at 12. So
I guess the question would be, though, rather than waiting the day of, I mean, like 1 month in advance, we go here, electron, you know, your deadline to respond is, March 1st. And then also,
right.
you email and you do your written or whatever you wanted. That can mail in if there's a discrepancy. We'll even match it too. I kind of like that
Wrong.
Idea.
Wrong. It doesn't happen like that. With the human element involved in there, humans have been known here in Nevada to throw monkey wrenches into the works. What happens is that someone gets mad at the policy or a candidate or an issue, and they're holding back votes, blocks of votes, or changing them, registration name. All those things are possible still with the advent of the use, or in my instance, overuse of computers. So, we're trying that, John. We're in the process of this big social experiment, a big social computer experiment, and it's not working. Common Core is your prime example. The mandatory that all students have access to a computer. That's impossible. That's spelled letter M, P-O-S-S-I-B-L-E. Impossible. You cannot get computers service to every child in America. And they're large, rural.
They all have TVs, most of them in electricity.
Most. Now, there you go again. Most.
Except for the South, many, you know, Mississippi, maybe.
Are you talking about any, internet connection?
I'm talking about internet connection. My wife is AT&T. She knows that AT&T has no way at this time in history, and none of the others, even if you combine all the cable and airway and effort, the rays, they don't have nearly 100% coverage.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't learn or won't learn.
Well, that's why we're falling like a rock in the world education system. So you figure that out. But the bottom, because we've had Common Core, the use of computers in classrooms for 25 years now.
I have a solution for it. I think the answer is anarchy, and choose me as your leader. I will overthrow everything, and you know, we'll get it all sorted out.
Well, then just put your name on it.
My kids in the elementary school are on the laptop 2 hours a day out of 6 hours.
And that's
sometimes
ridiculous.
Depending if they have PE, music, or art, like a flex time. But most of it's still worksheets and pencils. But they're on there like 1 hour a day writing essays.
They were video games all that time.
No, they have this giant laptop cart that they push from room to room. And like in English, the kids, like, they wrote an essay on chocolate milk. And how many nutrients it has versus white milk. You know, stuff like that. They're not goofing around, in other words. John, since you're extremely exhausted and so am I, can we take a brief 5-minute interlude so John can tell us his funny bike story?
Go for it. Funny bike story. Yeah.
John Yoder. ... John? We're waiting for your funny bike story.
Well, you know, I suggested me taking over the whole, you know, the government, but you're already willingly handing me over the show. It's working. It's just the power of suggestion.
It's exactly how it works, because we have some very stupid people in both parties, so we have to work with them, and that's one of the best ways to do it. It's just telepathically.
Was this how Hitler got started? You know, because you think about it, here's a guy, he's an artist, he wants to maybe be a priest, doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. I mean, basically, he's a loyal citizen, he's pro his country and served it and all this stuff, and then someone says, hey, we're having a propaganda meeting, would you like to, you know, check it out? And then he's like, what's propaganda? He's like, hey, it's the next thing that, you know, the next big thing. And pretty soon, he's up there standing and shouting, and people are dancing to the song. And, you know, the rest is history. But in terms of me, I was doing a little, dog walking with the bike. Really a nice dance we have. We go through the park. We kind of go cautiously, and then there's a couple center sections next to some trees, and we start to build speed. I kind of hype the dog up, you know, talking about the rabbits and the squirrels, and the dog gets hyped, and we start zipping it. You know, we we get velocity and we're going like 20, 25 miles an hour and looking for, you know, and of course I make sure there's no people and kids, you know, cause that wouldn't be too cool. But we basically ambush, you know, whatever unsuspecting animals out there. In fact, now I always stop the hound from making a kill. Not that she's gotten really close, but whenever she does get close, I kind of tug on her or misdirect her, or I wave the birds away, you know, that kind of thing. Cause I don't think it would play too well, you know, an assassination right in front of, you know, a five-year-old kid. But this last week she almost got a squirrel, and the squirrel got up on a short tree and was mocking her, you know, kind of chirping away and flipping its tail at her. And so the squirrel was unaware I had a tennis ball, so I threw the tennis ball, knocked her off the tree, and in mid-flight, the squirrel grabbed the next branch. It was an incredible performance. But basically, someone called me from my cell, and I'm on the bike, and it was at night, and we're going along the pier, the dock. They have railings there at Marina Del Rey, and it's about the platform's about, you know, 10 feet above water, and I was in a cold zone. I was in a zone where not a lot happens, not too many birds or anything. And so I felt at liberty to, you know, cell talk and ride the bike with the dog. And in this cold zone, a bird happened to just fly right across in front of us, which the natural dog reaction was to bolt for it in the side direction, and which put me in a very off-balance situation. And being with the cell, I wasn't ready to counterbalance. I was trying to protect the cell. As I fell forward, my hand hit the ground, and the cell slid across the asphalt straight into the Pacific Ocean. So, and the sad thing is the person I was talking to, I don't have their phone except in my cell phone. So I think they've been waiting the last 3 days for me to answer their question. It probably redialed me like 50 times and no answer. But I did get a replacement phone and I rolled the number over. My face did contact pavement, and historically pavement always wins. And I basically scrunched my face, but I didn't break anything. So I kind of lucked out on that one. I can I'll send you a picture, Jane. You can
Don, can you top that story? Did you have a cat fight with a Vegas showgirl between two rows of slot machines?
Who, me? Because Don,
yeah.
No.
Is your wife
yelling
at you right now?
No, we're at a birthday party and getting ready to leave. Because I've got work tomorrow, but
wow.
Here I'm away now. But yeah, no, this we you know I'm moving. This 18 hours I'm awake. And
I know whose birthday party it was, Vaughn.
No, yes it is. It's
because she posted a picture on Facebook.
Yeah, it'd be hopefully our son-in-law, but he's got to ask the question. But, yeah, it's his birthday party, and so we're there right now. But, yeah, no.
Isn't that funny that I know what you're doing?
No, it's sickening, but my wife loves to post those things, so I'm not, you know, I have to just sit back and take it or give it or whatever the case may be because we're somewhere different two or three times a day, and so I don't know what she's posting, but whatever it is, it's everything. So,
did you know
surprised.
She posted a picture of you in SpongeBob underwear?
I don't have SpongeBob underwear.
I was just testing you to see if you'd buy it.
No. But.
What I was going to report tonight.
But John,
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say. The only thing would be funny is that your face is an improvement after hitting the concrete. Otherwise, that is not a funny story.
Well, actually, that It did probably improve my face a little bit, I think. It gave
you
some more character.
Exactly, that rugged manhood.
Now he has a William. He has a William Dafoe nose.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, it's miraculous because I looked in the mirror. You know, I'm not trying to be over, you know, vain or humble, but it's like, see, my brother has a schnoz. I mean, he's got a little bit of hook in his nose, and
ooh.
I, you know, I'm about it. My mother had a little bit of a hook in hers. Mine, I don't. Mine's just kind of straight. It doesn't have the big, you know, rounded thing, and also I don't have the ski jump thing, like, you know, the Hollywood actresses, they come down here and after a couple of years, you know, in LA, they get that little ski slope thing going for their nose. But with mine, it's pretty level. So the amazing thing is, if my face hit flat on it, it should have really just done a number all the way from top to bottom, you know, from top of forehead to chin. But I can only surmise that the nose compacted in. And, the, of course, where the bone is, that's what hit. And then the rest of the nose just kind of flattened in. And I just got very lucky. It was a split-second impact. So I didn't have full contact on it.
But from German and Spanish to German to Asian.
Possibly. You know, an interesting thing is today I had a conversation. We had a board meeting today in the afternoon. And after everyone left, I was at the host house, and we were talking about 50 million things. And one of the things came up was minorities and Mexicans and, you know, blacks and so forth. And an interesting subject came up as far as I mentioned. I kind of sided with Don that the African-American male is in sports is a superior athlete. I'm talking genetically, you know, in general. And she was like, she started to question. I said, well, if 10 or 15% of the population in America, yet the NBA is probably 90% African-American. And in football, it's about, I think, 75%. And I said, and most of those sports are built on the ability to jump and to run at the highest level. And she countered that, no, it was a matter of practice that black kids just have nothing else to do but to, their hope is to make, you know, the NBA, and to, that's their ticket out. And I said, well, it doesn't matter how much you practice. I have Mexican friends who practice all day. But if you can't jump and dunk a 10-foot, you know, hoop, it doesn't matter how much you practice.
I agree.
And then what it kind of opened up into another discussion, I said, well, to me, it's not racist to say that on a sample size that a certain races have higher physical abilities than others. And I said, how many NBA Mexican players do we have? I mean, seriously. And I said, you know, I've been to events where there's 1,000 Mexicans and I can look, you know, I being half Hispanic, I can look over them. Because most of them are 5'4 to 5'2. If I go to a club in Hollywood, I have to look up because everyone is 6 foot tall, the males, you know, the white males, they're 6 foot, you know. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be prejudiced, I'm just speaking reality. But the question I pose is, if there's a physical difference, are there intellectual differences? And not to down criticize anyone, but is it possible certain races have lower IQ scores traditionally, you know, is, you know, and of course we got into culture.
Well, that has to do with white testing that was created with pens and papers. I mean, not all intelligence and survival skills and all that kind of stuff has to do with something you learn in school. But I read tonight that 70% of the 12 million slaves that came from Africa, 70% went to the West Indies, Central and South America, and Hispanics are mixed with black, and a lot of black Hispanics won't acknowledge black blood in their race. But also a lot of the Spanish mixed in with the Native Americans in Central and South America, and that's where A lot of them are so short.
Let me pose it a different way. Are we saying on a physical level that Mexicans, whites, blacks, and Asians are statistically the exact height and weight dimensions on average? And using that kind of that thinking, because I'm open and objective, is it also possible that all races have exactly identical IQ capacity and aptitude? Or is it possible, without being prejudiced, to say, hey, Mexican, same environment, same exposure, a Mexican might score 80 on a test, and a white person might score 85, and a Jewish person might score 89. Not to label that you can't be. I'm just saying, on an average, is that possible? Is what I'm saying.
It depends on your cultural conditioning. For example, in Mexico City, let's say a lot of the kids have to stop going to school in seventh grade. They're not going to take a 10th grade test. They finished school already in seventh.
We're afraid to,
but
you can't
generalize. The answer is you can't generalize.
I understand when a person walks up to me, whether they're white, yellow, green, red, it doesn't matter. I can't look at them and say, guess what? You're not going to be as smart as me because your group, all the green people, aren't that smart. I'm just saying, statistically, is it a viable theory? If you know that someone's black, they probably have kinky black hair. They probably have dark skin. I know there's exceptions, but you're not going to see white skin, straight hair. If they're Mexican, are they going to have red? Well, they might if they're mixed Europe. I'm just saying. Intelligence and your speed to reason and reflex, all that stuff.
I saw a black baby last night with blue eyes. Where are we going with this? Because I got to go back to the studio and see if Albert called in.
Where I was going with this is we're afraid to just say, hey, there's a certain reality to some things. And that, we can't say that. It's like we can say that a Mexican has brown skin, but we can't say that they're failing in schools. Well, it's because of their exposure. Maybe that's some of it. But I'm just saying, if a kid comes up to me, Hispanic, says,
"I'm
in the NBA,"
I think it's
because
I'm a teacher. Like,
yeah.
You can't generalize stuff like tests, because what if I gave a white person who's not bilingual a bilingual test? But what if I gave, I've lived in California and Minnesota and four other states. What if I give somebody a test on something they're not familiar with? I mean,
what if I, John, standardized tests? Right, but what if I, as John Yoder, go up to a teacher, and I'm 14 years old, and I'm 5'7", and I run the 100 in 12 seconds, and say, I'm going to be the next center for the Los Angeles Lakers. As a teacher, do you go, John, I think that all things are possible, and you can do anything, and you can be president of the United States. Is that really helping me? Now, you could also be wrong to say you can't, but I'm just saying, John, the odds are statistically, you got a one in, well, you actually have no chance. I'm sorry to be the center for the Los Angeles Lakers. You're not. Sorry. You can try. I'm just letting you know it hasn't happened ever. Unless you can,
How about
jump.
Mike Bibby? Mike Bibby from the Sacramento Kings. He wasn't very tall.
His dad was Henry Bibby, and I think he was over 6 feet tall, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a prime example that the white lady does not know what's going on. That Henry
Kiss
Bibby
my
was
ass,
half
black.
He was
man.
Half black. Come on, he was half black. Give me
I didn't
real.
Know that.
Yeah.
When you say when you say that the a certain career is 90%, it's actually, I believe, 84 or something like that, percent of a certain color, you can almost assume, and this is from polling, the white man's way of statistics is polling socially, you're talking about the propensity of him, of a great player.
I think you've had too much birthday cake. You can't even talk straight.
I've had 2 hours of sleep, like I said. But the bottom line is that I'm talking straight in the fact that John is trying to say that whomever he was talking to is trying to say that they have that under similar circumstances, people should have the same kinds of scores, and that's not true.
You can have equal opportunity, but I'm saying we're not all equal. That's all I'm saying. I'm not a brother man. That's all I'm saying. I can have equal opportunity.
None of us.
None of us disagree
with that.
But if you have the same ecological environmental living stimuli that everybody else has, then your scores should be equal. That's one of the things that
would I physically be the same? I think most people say no. The only way I'm going to get a kid in the NBA is I got to hook up with a 6'5" black female, or have some kind of genetic.
You can have the same body, height and weight, the overt dimensions. But you don't have the same muscular and nerve, and you know whites are a lot slower in their mind to their muscle.
Yeah, like
I went a little farther than
you
I
know. There's
there.
A Russian guy on the Minnesota Timberwolves who was fast, but big.
Well, whatever. Right, whatever. Yeah. You're gonna find that 1%. You're gonna find that one.
Yeah, statistically, if 90% of the population is white or 60%, and yet they're only 10 or 15% are making the NBA, what does that tell you? I don't know.
Right. That tells you that even though you've got the same dimensions, you've got different body types. You know, your muscular. Some people have muscular upper torsos. Some people have muscular midsections. Some people have more muscular legs, and that's where that's where the differences are in cultures. Some people have if you've got smaller legs, you're going to be much quicker. But if you've got larger legs, you're going to be much more powerful, and you're going to have the capability of learning that quickness. That's what you were mentioning, Jane. But it's at birth. In this case, blacks in athletics are going to naturally have an advantage at birth with the larger muscle groups in certain parts of their body that make them bigger, faster, and stronger. It's just, there's a combination there of everything, but there are some races that are more suited for some types of, in this case, we're talking about sports than others.
Yeah, I'm just saying we live in an age where we're afraid to state certain things. We're afraid, like, oh, he's black. No, he's not. We're all equal. He has no color. No, he has color. It's cool. It's beautiful.
Oh,
he has color.
He has color, all right.
Yeah.
You know, and then he is very, very proud of his color. That's the problem, is that the whites know that there is a black pride in the African-American community that is overwhelming. I've mentioned it before. Blacks inherently know that they are in most ways superior. The knowledge factor is behind because in the United States anyway, blacks were not. It's illegal to teach blacks anything until 1950s. It was illegal for blacks to go to school in many parts of the country. So you're right now. Minorities in general, because the Hispanics are coming up against the same problems, but you know, they're behind.
Did we lose John?
I think Don has been taken by the either the KKK or they should have gotten me first. That's because I'm kind of half and half. They, I live on the west side, so they don't know what to do with me.
I do want to say something that sounds kind of biased. I think that God has makes certain people gifted on purpose. Like, I do think Jewish people are special. A lot of Jewish people are exceptionally smart. And then I was thinking about the life of Prince, and God, you know, he ended up becoming a Christian in the end, and how God kind of made him special, like with his unusual music and stuff.
Well, I think too, mixed kids have a lot of exciting different talents and abilities. And
Don called back on his wife's phone. Don, hold on a minute. Let John finish his thoughts.
I was just going to say, diversity is a beautiful thing. And I was joking when I said, "Well, I need to hook up with a 6'5", black woman to get a kid into the NBA." But there is an element of truth when you're picking partners. What kind of kids you're going to have, what their genetic tendencies are going to be. And it's exciting. It's not something to be, oh, this is bad or terrible. It's like celebrating our strengths. And it's like all flavors are good. Some people like Asian. Some people like, some people like pizza. Some people like.
I made a 6'3" child, and I'm only 5'2".
Yes, you did. And
I guess Lauren's dad's only 6'1", and Lauren's grandmother has a couple brothers who are pretty tall. But let's let Don know that he's back in. Hi, Don.
Hi there. My phone went dead.
John thought the Illuminati
or the KKK.
The tribal Illuminati got you.
Believe me, they're next. They've got me on my on their list. Believe me, when I talk to people in the state, they know that I'm saying something that may not be mainstream. So I'm not surprised. It's never politically correct.
Well, one of the decisions why I decided to kind of keep pursuing music when I was younger is that I realized, because I was good in athletics, I love sports, I love basketball, I love baseball, I love football, I enjoyed it, but the physicality of people getting smashed, it wasn't appealing to me. The running around and catching a ball or throwing it, that was fun, but to see a guy, his leg get snapped in the wrong direction, after a couple times of seeing that, you go, I'll stick with baseball or even basketball. But the point being is that I just realized as a musician I could play 30 or 40 years and probably be in it didn't matter how tall I was. I could be 4 foot tall. As long as my fingers were working, I could excel in it and be creative. Whereas
my windows are down too.
In sports there was going to be limitations. At 5'7", I wasn't genetically in the elite. I was in maybe the top 20-15%, but the athletes you're seeing on sports, they're in the 1-2%. So I was on the edge of the bubble. I just couldn't get anywhere close to being an elite athlete, and it was an easy decision. I don't have to worry about sports. I can enjoy it, watch it, and play it, but I don't have to obsess over why I didn't turn pro. It wasn't really an option for me.
Okay, because that's a big time decision. Mm-hmm. That's a big time decision of people in the in the inner cities, or anywhere in the rural, anywhere who have aspirations of becoming a pro. Those you don't really know until you're well into either your senior year in high school or you're into college already. Then you realize, I'm not cut out for this, and that's when you have to change your discipline, majors, and a lot of things are happening. You know, that's when things can happen.
We had a guy on our football team. His name is Glenn Campbell. Phenomenal athlete. He was a brother man. And he was all, you know, NorCal, you know, running back, first team, whatever you want to call it. He was all everything high school. And he got offers from USC, UCLA, and, of course, the other colleges like Oregon State and places like that. And seeing the stars, seeing the brass ring before him, he chose, I think it's USC. I believe it's either there or UCLA. I'm pretty sure it's USC. And the bottom line was when he got there, after being all world, he was suddenly number 6 or 7 on the reserve list of running backs. I think he had an injury, but the fact is he never cracked even the top, you know, 3 or 4 running backs. And as most of these athletes will find out, there's just, you're, even when you're elite, there are so many elite athletes from all these schools across the country. When you come down to the top 20 universities, you know, you're number 15 or number 7 or number 5, and someone's got to get hurt before you even crack rotation.
That's a good analogy.
Well, that's how it is in politics, except for all shit naturally rises to the top, so you're not going to get the best person.
Well,
I hate to tell
like
you
that.
Guys this, but it's 12:01 in Minnesota, and
okay.
You guys can keep talking, but I'm doing my conclusion.
Okay,
so,
well, I'll do my conclusion too.
I haven't had a chance to talk really. Okay, well, go ahead and do your. You can do yours, and then John and I will finish the show up.
Yeah, well, that's because Jane's a white female. She's supposed to be quiet and not sing, or sing
and
not. Her.
And, right, but she's got to make my dinner now. So it's 12:01. Get the cooking.
Kiss my grip. You get macaroni.
been there, done that. But anyway, the thing that I would like to mention to everyone is that this is, we need to have the involvement.
Yes?
Yeah.
Is
KKK
dying now?
No. This is going to determine the foundation that we're going to be working on for the next 10, 15, 20 years. We're talking about the Supreme Court appointments. We're talking about how we're going to be taxed. We're talking about treatment of the LGBT. We're talking about voter rights. These are some major issues that we have to deal with now in the next 6 months. We'll be coming up against another hard budget, national budget. Fight. So we're looking at some major things that are coming down in the next 6 months. This election, even though I always say, don't worry about the presidential election, and that's what I mean. But this election, when you talk about your senators, your congressmen, and all your down ticket races, is extremely important. You need to vote with your head. Vote whatever way you want, but vote.
Yes.
And that's my conclusion.
Okay.
Nice.
John, can I go since I haven't gone the whole night?
Yes, as dictator of the radio program and chief anarchist, I give you permission, Jane.
It's funny that I just jumped on this news page on Facebook. Trump promises to deliver 4 to 5 anti-abortion Supreme Court justices. Anyways, I was in Minneapolis this weekend in St. Paul, and my friend said that we can't blame the entire chaos on the country on Donald Trump because certain people voted for him. Don, I was going to mute you for a minute because it sounds like you're frying wood.
I'm not. This is, you don't fry wood over here. You just burn it in the fireplace.
Well, it sounds like you were burning something crackly.
That's all right. I left my windows down on my convertible, and we got a brief little shower. So I was just turning it off.
He was burning Sanders, but he wasn't burning wood.
Burning wood. There you go. That was a nice just little joke.
Anyways,
go ahead, Jane. Sorry.
He said it was pretty general. It wasn't anything dramatic, but he said that Donald Trump is the symptom, not the cause of the current chaos, and that people
just want
to do anything to rock the boat. But he said if Trump gets to Washington, D.C. and wins, he's going to find it to be a strong uphill battle like Mount Everest if he thinks he's going to effectively change things. So
That's what I've been saying.
I know, buyer beware, whether it's Sanders or Trump or somebody else. It's not just going to be a walk in the park. So, hello?
That's what I'm saying when I talk about it doesn't matter really because Trump is or Sanders or Hillary or whomever is not going to have free reign over policy. It's going to have to be transparent and inclusive with the House.
Right. It's not just he can't disassemble Obamacare in one day like he keeps harping.
Exactly.
Blah blah blah
exactly.
blah blah. And I don't. To tell you the truth, we had such a fun show. I don't really want to talk about politics.
Okay, go ahead. That's right. I just.
But
hope
John, why don't
hit
you go ahead?
Sidewalk. I just hope John doesn't hit another sidewalk.
Yes. Well, my children.
In the sidewalk of life. What bump are you on, John?
There are potholes on that highway to heaven, and there are sinkholes in the highway to hell. So choose wisely, my friends. But I must lead my children into safety, into the promised land, and so I shall. But let me say that as disillusioned as we may get with our leaders, to consider this, and that is the strength of America is its unity. And that unity means all of us. It's not one or two people that lead us. It's the strength of Asians and Hispanics and African Americans and Anglo Americans and whatever kind of American you call yourself. It's our unity together that makes us strong. And so we want to, whoever we're working with, you know, the thing is, even if you have a bad idea, if you're united, you can still win. I'm talking like in sports and in life. You can have an idea that's not the best, but if you're united and you have conviction and passion, you can make it work. Case in point, is Madonna the greatest singer we've ever heard in our life? Is she the greatest songwriter? Do they study her works in music, higher education colleges? No, probably not. It doesn't matter. She has drive. She has passion, and people follow her. The point I'm stating is, as Americans, myself, it doesn't matter who's president. I could sit back and go, oh, I got a bad back, and my leg hurts, and I'm 56, and I'm just, you know, life sucks, and I'm just going to give up. It's like, no, I'm working a couple of jobs. I'm working opportunities. I help people around me that are struggling because it doesn't matter to me who's president. I know who I am. And so I think Americans need to not get disillusioned and not get disappointed and frustrated and quit, but to stand up united, fight hard, you know, do the right stuff, and it's going to work out. It really will for most of us. And if you lose faith, you're going to lose it all. So that's my call to the country today. You may all applaud and stand and cast your vote for me now.
There you go. How do you spell that last name? Y-O-D-O-O-R-S. Everybody
yes.
Write that down as your write-in vote.
Y-O-D-E-R-B-O-N-E-H-E-A-I-D.
Okay.
I misspelled bonehead.
It's the Amish version. You know, we felt that Hitler wasn't going to work too well. That title just doesn't seem to go strike the right chord in the community as being a dictator. So we're going with Yoder. You know, it's Amish.
We're just ready to go. Okay. Go with the regular order. But no, that was
the
a very poignant point.
I would like, in some ways, even though I'm a Hillary supporter, it would be cool if Bernie Sanders won. He'd be the first Jewish American president.
Well, that's what I've been saying is that the Hillary people are not going to throw the party out the window. They're not going to flush it down the drain.
Right.
The Bernie people will. And that's why we have to be careful of Bernie and his constituents, his people, because they are as dangerous in some facets as the Trump people. And that's not good for America. They don't care
about
America.
You want to know why they would do it? Because they actually do not identify with the two-party system. So
right.
He's just as much a phony for running under the Democratic ticket as Trump is for running as a Republican.
And why can't people understand that? I don't get it. That's what I try to tell them, is that this anarchy thing for both parties, even though it is good for, I mean, the energy level brought forth by the youth is incredible. I haven't seen a caucus convention with this much energy and verve that it's had. But we need to understand.
But you know what?
Like
even
John
people
Hitler,
like Albert
like
think
Hitler.
That. Even people like Albert, our co-host, think that he thinks Hillary is one step short of Satan's daughter. So,
right, and that's. But she.
And
she's
she not
very well. Oh no, that woman is not an angel. That's for sure. But the thing is that she is, in this particular instance, as much as I, you know, it hurts me to say it, she's the best in breed. And that's what we have to take into consideration, is that in America, for the help and for the nation at this time in history, she is probably the best choice, even though she is a crook. And she is, she tends to be sexually promiscuous, and there are other things that haven't come out yet. But the bottom line is,
you're saying she's the best crook for the job, basically.
She's the best crook for the job. That's exactly what I'm saying.
I think where Jane gets a little perturbed is, I think that Hillary, when she was Jane's age and in that kind of that 17 to 21, going to college kind of groove, I think that ideologically she was where Jane was at, you know, and very idealistic and very kind of communistic, but I mean in a good way, not in the Stalin way or in the, Brezhnev way or Khrushchev. We're talking more kind of in the early days, you know, Marxism kind of stuff. The ideology of just commonness of man and brotherhood and that kind of unity. So I think she kind of had a lot of those type of ideas that she was passionate about. I think the problem is Jane identifies with that Hillary as a kindred spirit, and that was three decades or four decades ago, and that the Hillary we have here by action, not by words, you know, because they always have this rhetoric, but by actions is – you call it, cold-blooded murder, and I'm not saying she kills people. I'm saying the actions of the government, as we know them, are small.
Yeah, hold on a second, though. I listened to Al Gore's audio book this week, and they framed in media proportions or media agenda setting the sympathy for going into Iraq for a full-scale war. Now, I'm not a big women's right woman like Hillary is. I was more of a civil rights person for blacks. But I think that everything you said was right, John, but the thing is that everything's come full circle again with, like, the Black Lives Matter thing and all the Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown stuff, so I really don't think Hillary's causes are really that out of date.
True, but you know it, what I'm saying is that her, not just her, I just mean the whole political leadership, whether it's Al Gore or whether it's Mitt Romney or whether it's Obama, I think the scene from Planet of the Apes, I'm not sure which one because I didn't follow the whole series, but it's probably like the second one or whatever. There was a sequence where the apes, the leadership, they encountered a human that could talk. And up to that time, they hadn't experienced that because they thought the humans were less evolved. And these guards had brought him in, right? And then the leader says, I'm glad you brought them here. You know, does anyone else know about this? And they said, oh, no, no one else has. He says, good. And he told him to go for a report to someone. And when they left, he orders his guys to kill those men, you know, or those apes. And, you know, so basically it was like on the outside, they're all shaking hands and looking, trying to do what's right. But I'm saying when they go to the back room, it's like, okay, this guy needs to be killed. This country needs to be blown up, you know, and do it now. And by the way, I have nothing to do with this order. This is, you know, the perception is I'm the loving leader, but behind closed doors, cold-blooded killers is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it sounds like the way that our civilization is run right now.
I saw ads this week on Facebook. It was like one of those snapshot pictures. They said the Republicans keep saying Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. They must think we're stupid, stupid, stupid. What about Iraq, Iraq, Iraq? We're not dumb, dumb, dumb.
Okay.
Like Ayatollah you so? I think, you know, and here's the other thing. If I went through process and was elected the next president of the United States, guess what I'd have to be doing after I gave my loving speeches? I'd have to go to that back room and go, well, we've got terrorists, you know, so-and-so here, and Iraq's got the nukes ready to go here. It's like, okay, send in special, you know, black ops, you know.
No, you'd have to prove your birth certificate was valid. That would be the second thing to do.
Right. But I would be like, I would have to be giving all these orders of like, you know what, these people die and these other people live. And it's just the balance of power. And they go, how come you're supporting this dictator or you're running guns to this country? It's like, because I have to do it for the greater good. And I think that's where they get stuck.
I don't think it's that cutthroat, is it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
The debate is tough. The decision is easy. And the decision is going towards whomever is going to pay the most for the services.
I mean, Jane, consider this. You're dealing with Putin. You're dealing with Kim Jong, whatever, you know.
Kim Il-jung.
Yes. You're dealing with some wicked, wicked stuff. And this is just what we know. This is the unknown. I mean, you're getting reports from generals. You're getting reports from, you know, satellites and agents, double agents, triple agents, probably, you know. You're getting all kinds of information. Oh, the Chinese. I'm talking to the gal. It works with Northrop. He says everything we have gets hacked by the Chinese. Everything.
Everything.
You know. Everything gets hacked by them, and they have to keep changing codes and different protocols and this and that. That's the world we live in. So a president can't be squeaky clean and wholesome and Ken and Barbie and Neil living in Camelot with Jackie and JFK. There's a bunch of dirty stuff going on. It's the planet.
I just heard on NPR this week that when Tibetan families talk to each other through like email or social media, they have to change all their identities, because the Tibetan government is still coming after the Chinese government, still coming after those people, even if like they send money through PayPal.
Well, you saw where the Queen of England, she said the Chinese were despicable people. I don't think that was That was they're discourteous or disrespectful. And now that is the whole viral rage on the internet. So you might want to check that out and show.
I haven't heard of that. I was out of town from Saturday morning till today.
Well, the English are calling the Chinese rude and disrespectful. So there you go.
Okay, well, on that note, I've eaten a half a canister of Pillsbury Funfetti frosting while we're talking, and I'm on a sugar buzz, but I want to go. John, do you have a conclusion?
We already had our conclusion. Sorry, concluded, yes. But don't worry, be happy. That's my conclusion. Don't worry, be happy.
Well, I do have one more thing to say. Go ahead, Don.
Make love, not war.
Look at that.
My final words is that Al Gore said there's only three simple things to create a dictator. Have a cause, repeat it several times, and then sell it to the people through something like tainted media. I can't remember what the third thing is.
Well, obviously he didn't take his own advice, because he would have been a dictator by now if he had. But he lost miserably. So I wouldn't listen to Al Gore.
What are you talking about? He tied with George Bush.
Okay, well, he tied and lost by the electoral.
And if you see the movie Hacking Democracy, Volusia County in Florida gave him minus 27,000 votes. So those machines were tainted. The weirdest part of Al Gore's audiobook is when he was on his farm in Tennessee, he learned how to hypnotize chickens.
But was this while he was inventing the internet? And the question is, couldn't he have learned how to, since he invented computers, he should have been able to manipulate the votes better.
No, he was eating the computers, if you notice. And he was hypnotized. He was dancing and hypnotizing the chickens, but he was eating the computers.
My dad could hypnotize chickens.
I think we're all drunk. Hey, I have one funny joke that ties in with John's race theory. Why is it so hard for criminologists to check the DNA of rednecks?
I give up.
You guys know the answer?
None of them have teeth.
Go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going to say, because no needle can fit through the leather.
The answer is that none of them have teeth, and their DNA is all the same because they're all blood related. Okay, with that.
Wow. John, you let Don get off the air before I tell my Britney Spears joke.
No. I'm not off the air. I was just trying to understand.
Can we save it for next week, John? In the meantime, Don and I are going to have a test tube baby, and John's going to raise it.
Not bad.
Not as long as he keeps crashing and...
I mean, I want to have a kid, but I want him to play in the NBA.
But, John, don't interbreed with squirrels.
No,
I don't know why I said that. Why did I say that?
Well, obviously, you have some unresolved issues.
Thank you, John.
I'll give you permission to breed with Yale, because she still wants a baby.
Is she able to?
I don't know. I think she's getting close to 50 now.
So probably we could call it a Hail Mary for sure.
Wow, that's a good one. Now that's
a Yale Mary.
Yale Mary. I think that's a good joke to end the show on.
Yes.
Good night, everybody. It's getting warped, and I'm hanging up. Good night, all children.
Good night.
Good night, all sperm donors in America.
Good night.